Welcome to the latest episode of Top Lot with myself, Ash White, and my colleague, Mikey Roy. How are you, Mikey?
Very well, thanks, Ash. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. Do you have a bit of a spring in your step after Lucky Vega's second in the Middle Park on Saturday?
Yeah, he ran great, didn't he? I mean, it was a bit disappointing to get beaten. The winner looks very, very good, I think. And he ran a terrific race, and I think he shaped like he might get a bit further, which is exciting, looking at next year. And I think he'd have a really good shot in a Guineas, whichever one he turns up in.
Yeah, for those of you who might not know and be new to the podcast, Mikey pinhooked Lucky Vega for a very tidy 65,000 Guineas profit at the Orby sale last year. And the colts turned out to be a Group 1 winner already. So fingers crossed you're right, Mikey, and he will lay up in the Guineas. Although I do remember you saying a couple of weeks ago that you just said he'll win one. So are you going back on that now?
I'm not going back on it. I think he looks as good as anything I've seen so far in terms of what might turn up in the race. High Definition was very good the other day, wasn't he, in the Beresford Stakes? But from what we've seen so far, I think he's got as good a chance as any. I'm sure there are some very, very good ones to come out.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I think he's a bit of a rocket, so fingers crossed. And around the corner, we have the next set of European yearling sales, including Goffs Orby and Tattersall's October. Will you be going and looking to buy anything for yourself?
We'll be going to buy a couple of fillies, I hope. We're going to be looking at Book One mainly. There's actually a couple in the Orby that we're looking at. There's a full brother to Gareth, who's going to go have a little sneak peek at. And then there's also a sister to a filly that we quite like in the sale as well. So we'll have a look at the Orby and then a couple of fillies at Book One that we might look to add to the breeding shed. So we'll see if we can do any damage.
Okay, well, I'm going to Orby on Wednesday, so if you need me to have a look at anything, just let me know, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck at the sales and look forward to seeing how you get on. Hopefully you can find yourself another gem.
Let's hope so.
Without further ado, we hope you will enjoy our fantastic lineup of guests in this episode, including Newsall's Park Stud's General Manager, Julian Dollar, Keeneland's Ed Prosser, and Bloodstock agent, Oliver St. Lawrence. We are delighted to be joined by our first guest of the episode, Newsall's Park Stud's General Manager, Julian Dollar. Welcome, Julian. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Ash. Very well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. How's life on the stud?
Busy, as you'd imagine, but all good, thank you.
Yeah, great.
So, Julian, Newsall's Park have been the leading consigner at the last two editions of the Book One sale. I imagine this year's been slightly different and posed some pretty unusual challenges for you. How's preparation been so far?
Preparation has been good, and much like any other prep, to be perfectly honest with you, we sort of tend to start with the Book One horses a good 10 weeks before the sale. Although, as I say, it's a bit of a cliche, but you know, we're really prepping these horses for sale from the moment they're born, really, and looking at them from a very commercial point of view. I suppose the only real difference, or the huge difference that we've all faced, is coronavirus and how that's likely to impact on the sales. So, you know, from the spring, we looked at the situation and realized that there was a chance, and God forbid, I suppose there is still a chance, that the sales would not take place physically. And therefore, we looked at things and thought to ourselves, well, how can we get around that? And we obviously took the sale at Inglis at Easter as an example in how the Australians went about having a virtual sale that actually went off remarkably well. So we looked at renewing our website, which we thought about a little bit before, but we thought actually this was a good year to do it so that we could use that as a very good platform to show off our yearlings. And, you know, so we've got a brand new shiny website, which is principally to promote the stallions, but also, as I say, the yearlings. And there's good photos, videos and information on all the yearlings up on that site that people can look at and enjoy. And we've also tried to have a few more stud visits, farm visits, if you like, for bloodstock agents to come and see the horses on the stud. We've always done them, but I have to say I've only limited them to a few a year, just a little bit of practice, whereas this year I've looked at it as an opportunity to get people to be able to see the horses physically should things get a lot worse and we're not able to have the sale physically at Tassels, but at the moment I hope that will still take place.
Mm-hmm.
And Julian, can you tell us a bit about the potential stars in this year's consignment, please? I know there's a lot of them, but potentially a few of the highlights.
Yeah, it's a difficult place to start, really, Ash. I do have some lovely horses. I've made no secret of the fact that I do think this draft of horses, certainly as types physically, are probably as nice, if not the best draft I've ever had the privilege of taking up to the sale. So I'm very positive about them. I suppose you have to start with Japan and Mogul and Secret Gesture and Sir Isaac Newton's full sister, who I think is very special. You know, tough one, as I've said, to be offering her for sale, but we felt that in the circumstances, bearing in mind that we are a commercial operation that needs to wash their face and we try and be profitable each year, that she was a filly that we would be prepared to offer. And I think she's lovely. I think she's a real queen and a real collector's item for any serious breeder anywhere in the world, to be honest with you. I know the family very well, obviously. She's right up there with any of them. I mean, she's not a colt, so she's not built like Mogul or Sir Isaac Newton were. Japan was always a little bit more elegant, I think. But she is as nice, if not the nicest filly that I think we've ever had the pleasure of offering. And she's got, physically, she's everything you want her to be, given her breathing. And she's got a real swagger to her. But also, she's just got something about her. You know, mentally, her temperament, she's serene. That's what I describe her as. She is serene. And she knows she's special. I know people always say that about good horses. And who knows, she might not be a good horse, but I think people, horses, you know, like her, that she's just got something about her. She's very much the boss in the paddock when she gets turned out with two or three other fillies, but not in an aggressive way. She doesn't need to be aggressive. She just is the boss. And she always has been in any paddock she's been in, but she never has to get nasty to show it. And with people, she's an absolute delight. And she loves being fussed and mollycoddled and everything else. But she knows, she comes out and stands and she says, look at me, aren't I a bit special? So she is without doubt the highlight. She's something that is a rare and unusual. And I hope that she generates the sort of price that I think she deserves to. But yeah, we do have a lot of other lovely horses. I've got a lovely bunch of fillies. They are great walkers. They are correct, good-looking stock. A lovely Siouni filly out of a mare called Keschok, a Gaelic name, which I hope I pronounced right. She's a new approach mare that we bought a few years ago in Keeneland. She's lot 84. I think she's an absolute belter. Just a lovely balanced filly. And I think everything you'd look for in a Siouni filly. Another nice filly is Lope de Vega out of Lady Darshan, mare that we've had some success with. And I think she, again, is very elegant, strong, actually, good walker, very nice filly. She is lot number 254, Lope de Vega. We sell the odd one for other people, but as you know, we generally try and just offer what we breed on the stud. We obviously sell for Gestut Fairhof. And they've got a very nice Kitten's Joy filly out of a mare called Sarandia. She came to us only a few weeks ago, looking very, very well. And thankfully, we haven't screwed that up yet. She's lot 419. But I think she's, for a first foal out of a German Oaks second, she's very nice. And for another charming gentleman called Manfred Ostermann from Gestut Itlingen, very successful German breeders, we have a Fastnet Rock filly, 279 out of a mare called Lopera. And again, she's very nice. So, I mean, look, I could go through the whole draft and I would happily, without wanting to take up hours of your time, but a really lovely bunch of fillies. And then some cracking colts, two Frankel colts spring to mind early on, lots 36 and 62. One is out of an Oasis Dream mare from the family of Eminent, which is why we bred it to Frankel. He's very attractive with a real swagger. The way he walks very much reminds me of Frankel, who had that amazing panther-like movement. And I really like him. And then 62 is a Frankel out of another Oasis Dream mare, this time Birdwood, who's a half-sister to Enable. So he obviously stands out on pedigree. And he's very nice, strong colt, well made. He ought to have his admirers. Daydream always causes interest for obvious reasons. And she has a Dubawi, lot number 112. He's a very strong horse, big, powerfully made horse. He's impressive. So he'll no doubt have interest. And an absolute, well, not known for precocity, I have to say, at Newsles Park Stud, but we have a belting two-year-old type, 250 Kodiak out of Kinnaird. Kinnaird was a mare that Mr. Jacobs enjoyed racing with Patrick Haslam many years ago now. We're talking about when Newsles Park Stud first came into existence, and she won the Prix de l'Opera. And then she was a favourite of ours at the stud for many years before she sadly died last year. But she left us with this absolute cracking Kodiak colt, who's strong, big, powerful, but with a walk. And he just looks like he means business from the get-go. I'm not an expert on two-year-olds, as everybody knows, but I'd be absolutely shocked if that horse wasn't running in two-year-old races by late spring. He has everything, I think. And he's a really, really nice horse.
Brilliant. One other one to touch on. I don't know if you're about to, but the See the Stars colt, half brother to Valtgeist. I bet he's one to look forward to.
He is. He's not actually a half brother to Valtgeist. He's a half brother to Mars Marvel, and he's a half brother to the Dam of Valtgeist. Huh. Valdlurker, who was a mare that we raced in partnership with Dietrich von Bottischer, and obviously bred with successfully. He's a really lovely horse. The mare has been a favourite of ours. She was, I've said many times, she's got a great emotional attachment, this mare, because she was bought as a foal in the year 2000 when Newsles was bought, and she was reared here, probably one of the first horses Mr. Jacobs ever bought, and he was always his favourite mare. Well, Bulldmark was his favourite mare, and that's why Valdgeist winning the Arc was a really emotional moment for me, because Mr. Jacobs was a very important part of the stud, and it was his passion and drive that created what we've got today. It's a great shame that he hasn't been able to see it all, but he would have taken great pride in what the stud's achieved, and he would have loved to have seen Valdmark have her success initially with Mars Marvel, of course, then Valdlurker, and then producing horses like Valdgeist. But we didn't have a foal out of her for 5 years, and we really thought we were throwing in the towel, but we persisted, and we were rewarded with a Frankel filly that's had a little setback, but she's with John Gosden, and we like. And now this really cracking See the Stars colt. And, See the Stars is a horse that, look, he's always been a very high-profile stallion because he was such a brilliant, brilliant racehorse. I mean, if Frankel hadn't come along, I think we'd still be talking about See the Stars. But I think he's a stallion that is only improving. And, this mare is ready-made for this horse. And, of course, it's the exact same cross as Crystal Ocean, a See the Stars out of a Mark of Esteem mare. So, it wasn't bred on chance, and we think the mare would really suit this horse, and we've got a lovely individual. So, I just hope that other people share my biased opinion.
And, Julian, it sounds like a hugely exciting bunch once again. I wanted to just ask you a more of a general question. You've been presenting top-class yearlings for a long time now. If you had any advice for someone starting out, consigning and preparing for the first time, what would be the sort of key pointers that you would tell them to put in place?
Well, in terms of presenting your draft physically, it's all about attention to detail. I really believe that. Feed them well. There's a lot of very good feed companies out there now which offer you exceptional nutritional advice. So you don't have to be a nutrition expert. They will help you. But it's a lot of elbow grease. I mean, a lot of operations don't have the luxury of being able to groom their horses every day, but all our horses get groomed for half an hour every day. They never get a bath because they don't need a bath. Their coats are shiny because they get groomed. But it's a luxury that we can do. Hand walking is essential because they need to be taught how to walk in hand well and show properly. It's very difficult. It's a lost art, I think, in a lot of places to have good people who are good at showing horses, and it can make the difference of literally hundreds of thousands of pounds if a horse is shown well or poorly. But that is important. And just hard work, attention to detail, really, to physically get the best out of the horses. You need a bit of luck. You don't want them doing something stupid. And don't forget, you're dealing with thoroughbreds who are getting increasingly fresh as they get fitter and fitter with all the wonderful food you're putting into. And they haven't got the outlet to let out steam. So, you know, you're dealing with unexploded bombs on the end of a piece of leather strap. And that can be quite problematic when you get up to the sales and suddenly it's a whole new world up there. So a good handling and care and diligence and attention to detail is essential. And then in terms of presenting them, you know, to clients, I just think honesty, integrity is absolutely essential. People have got to trust you. If you're coming into the business for the first time, you know, just be honest out there, show the horses best you can. Don't talk too much. I think people prefer to look at the horses in silence. If they have a question, they'll come and ask you. Don't hover over them, standing next door to them, telling them how wonderful this horse is. Let them make their own mind up. You know, I think most, for the most part, people like to be left alone. They know where to find you if they want to ask you any questions. And as I say, it takes years to build up a reputation for honesty and integrity. It would take seconds to lose it. So just keep that. Tell everybody what you know. If they ask you a straight question, give them a straight answer.
I was about to say, how long did it take you to Newsels is now such a renowned brand when you walk into book one and book two. How long did it take you to sort of build up that reputation and that relationship with all your big clients now?
I think people judge the horses on what they see in front of them. I remember a few years ago when we started to have the initial success with breeding group winners, and we've bred 12 now. Well, we raised one on the farm that we didn't breed, which is the Tin Man we bought as a foal. We raised him with the breeders, Elizabeth and Ken Grundy. But, you know, we've bred or raised on the farm 12 Group 1 winners in the last 10 years, which is a statistic that I'm proud of. And I think it's vital that, you know, we're seen to be producing top-class horses year in, year out. But I did remember 1 year when I thought we'd had a great year on the track that, you know, people would think, come and see Newsels thinking, well, this is a good nursery to buy from. And I think they only see really what's in front of them on the day. You know, it doesn't matter if you've bred numerous group winners or not. I mean, it does matter, but they're only really going to judge you on what's being presented in front of them in that particular year. But obviously the success of the farm as breeders has helped enormously, and the quality of the horses we're presenting. And for that, I obviously owe a lot of credit to the team who helped me. I say help me, they do basically all the work. I just get the job of standing in front of them and pretending that I'm important. But, you know, latterly, Jerry Meehan, who was the yearling manager when I arrived and set off to do his own thing a couple of years ago, he did a terrific job. And more recently, Mark Grace, who took over from Jerry, who's done the job for the last 2 years and equally does a wonderful job and is a great chap to work with. So, and then the more people get to know the team and people like Mark and talk to them, and the more comfortable they feel with perhaps buying from us. But as I say, I'd like to think we have a reputation for being honest and straight with people. We don't try and hide anything, whilst also at the same time doing the best job we can for our clients.
And Julian, just aside, moving away from the consignments, Newsels Park stand two stallions, Equiano and Nathaniel. How do you assess their careers so far? And do you have any plans to stand another stallion in the future?
Always looking to stand another stallion. We haven't been very successful in finding one over the last few years because it's just commercially, we just haven't made sense of the maths. There are some very big operations in this country who can afford to pay a lot of money to stand a stallion, which we can't compete with. And the guys in Ireland do such a good job with the mares that they get into their stallions that they also seem to have a bigger checkbook than we do for the sort of more commercial types. So we have found it difficult, but we're always looking to stand a new stallion if we can. As far as our present incumbents go, look, I'm hugely fond and proud of Nathaniel. We bought into him as a racehorse, and with Lady Rothschild, late Lady Rothschild, sadly, and that was a fun thing to do. I remember great days like when he won the Eclipse. That was a really special day, know, trips out to Leopardstown for the Irish Champion, where he just got done by Snow Fairy. You know, those were special moments, and he was a top class horse, and he is exactly like he was as a racehorse. He gives absolutely everything to you every single time. Like he did, you look at his time form ratings as a racehorse, and he basically ran within a couple of pounds of his top rating every single time. And that's just the horse that he is. He's a thoroughly honest, decent horse. He's not the most sexy commercial horse in a world where we increasingly love speed. But, you know, when you produce a horse like Enable from your very first crop, it's pretty special. And he's produced another classic winner in Channel since then, and another Group 1 winner, and plenty other Group 2 winners. So, you know, I'm proud of what he's achieved, and he's a very good stallion. Equiano has been great. I mean, he's been a really commercial horse for us. We own him in partnership with a really lovely Northern Irishman called James Atchison, and we've had a lot of fun with him. We didn't have to spend a lot to buy him, and then we got lucky that he won the King Stand Stakes again in a breathtaking style, really, as a four-year-old, and a five-year-old, I should say, and then we got to retire him to stud, and he's been very popular. You know, that speed sire line of acclamation, royal applause, he's always done very well, and you know, to have pinhooked the Tin Man and raised him here was fun and has been rewarding. And then last year you had Belvoir Bay, who won the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and that was pretty good. So he's just a thoroughly tough, genuine source of speed and lots of winners. I sort of talk of him a bit like a Bahamian Bounty had been for the National Stud, but he's just a very, very good source of winners and a good start for a small breeder's mare, I'd say.
And Julian, just one final one to touch on. We're used to you coming with some yearlings by some very established stallions, but I just wanted to ask your opinion on a few of the new stallions this year with their first yearlings, Ulysses and Churchill, etc. Are there any that you're really looking forward to, or any that you've got in your draft that you think are particularly nice?
Yeah, look, I'm not the best person to ask about first season sires because I don't tend to get exposed to them that much. We tend to use proven sires where we can. And also because I'm usually busy presenting horses at the yearling sales, I don't get out to see a lot of the first season sires. So I'm not a very good judge, and I tend to have to ask other people. But what I would say is that I've got a few Ulysses on the stud, and I like them very much. I really do like them. The colt I've got in book one is, I think, exceptional. He wouldn't have as strong as pedigree as some of the others, but because he's such a nice looking horse that I wanted to put him in book one. So he stands out for me, and the foals I got by him are very nice. So I like him. Churchill, we've got a nice filly in book two. He is the most impressive looking stallion if you ever get a chance to see him at Coolmore. So I'd like to see more of his, but I've got a nice filly in book two. I've got a nice postponed who for Mr. Barnett, who's a good client of ours, and he's in book two. But he seems to be very similar to Dubawi in that he's quite compact with a really strong top. But I like him. You know, if he passes on some of the traits that his father does, Dubawi does, then that would be a very good sign, wouldn't it? So, yeah, I like him. And those are about the only three I've got first season sires.
Excellent. Well, Julian, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate your time. And both of us wish you the very best of luck at the sales.
Thank you very much, Ash. And I look forward to catching up with you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Racing Post Members Club, a premium service offering a host of exclusive features and global content, including invaluable bloodstock-related tools such as pedigree information, sales data from around the world, and race replays. We are proud to offer our listeners a special deal on our most comprehensive subscription, Members Club Ultimate, for just £20 a month for the rest of 2020. Please visit racingpost.com, hit the subscribe button, and use the promotional code TOPLOT20. We're really pleased to be joined by our next guest, European representative for Keeneland, Ed Prosser. How are you, Ed? You all right?
I'm very good, thanks, Mikey. Thank you very much for for asking me to be on the podcast. I've enjoyed listening to them all so far. So I'm currently in Keeneland, just at the tail end of the September sale.
Pleasure to have you on, Ed. Thank you very much. Could you just tell us briefly a bit about your background and also your current role at Keeneland now?
Yeah. I years ago I did a thing called the BHB graduate course. I was then involved with a company called Race News that does PR for a lot of the big race courses in Britain, and also of course wrote about bloodstock and sales for a number of people, and primarily the Racing Post, which I did for about 15 years. So that was a fantastic experience, really, going around all the sales in Britain, a few overseas, and meeting the rich variety of people involved in the bloodstock world. I've dabbled a little bit with breeding, owning, and pinhooking horses, mainly unsuccessfully, the odd highlight. And then I think about 9 years ago, I was approached by Keeneland to become a European representative, taking over from a wonderful guy called Tim Preston. So I think I officially started in 2012 doing that. The role has various aspects to it. For those that don't know, Keeneland's sales and racing take place on the same 1,000-acre site just outside Lexington in Kentucky. So the room I'm in now, I can see out of one window the sales pavilion, and out of the other is the paddock with the Breeders' Cup statue ahead of the Breeders' Cup in November. Keeneland's probably the highest grossing sales company in the world, despite only staging 3 sales a year, and also has probably some of the best racing in North America. I think they have 10 grade ones. So to sum up some of my roles on the sales side, as well as Europe, I cover countries like Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkey, and all of the Middle East. So probably liaising with existing and sort of potentially new clients there who might be looking to buy to race in their own countries. Some might want to own horses in Europe or America, and sort of working with them to achieve really whatever their targets are. So I'd normally travel quite a bit through the year, which has obviously been a bit different in 2020, and sort of meet a lot of people, try and get them to come to the sales, etc. And then we also sponsor a number of races. The Keeneland Phoenix Stakes at the Curra, which I think Mikey might have a soft spot for this year. and then the Princess Margaret at Ascot. We sponsored a race in Jebel Ali for the first time this year. And then we've done things like races in Sweden, Turkey, Russia. And then elsewhere, things I'm not involved with, Keeneland sponsoring Korea, Japan, Australia. So I sort of coordinate those sponsorships, and people from Keeneland come over at various times of the year, go around meeting clients, etc.
And you mentioned you're almost at the end of the September yearling sale. How has your sort of impression been of how it's fared compared to expectations? Is it a bit above or below, or sort of as you guys would have seen it?
I mean, I think if you told us a year ago it would be as it is this year, we'd obviously be disappointed. But I think it's probably going into the sale, we knew this year was different, and it's probably as we expected in a way. A positive thing has been the second week. It's been very busy, good trade, sort of book 3 onwards. You know, it's been a packed sale ring, and I guess that's a real a strong middle market is very important for the industry. We'd have liked to see a stronger clearance rate early on, but I think you know, particularly with the prize money in America at the top end, a lot of the people selling yearlings might race horses as well, so they decide you know, they put a reasonably high reserve, and if the horse doesn't make that reserve, they'll keep the horse to race, which might be a bit different from Europe. So I think overall it's, you know, it's a year, I don't think anyone's being too greedy, and it's a year we get through, and then we'll try and build on it again next year.
I was going to say, has that been the sort of general impression in the States? Obviously, you have significantly better prize money than we do over here, and therefore sellers and breeders can be a little bit more punchy when retaining their horses because they know that they might see some of that value on the track.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's a very different economic model to the sort of European sales. You know, the guys in the second week buying a yearling for $50,000, sort of half thinking they'll be winning back that $50,000 with the horse, which we wouldn't do in Europe. I mean, I'm just looking at the Keeneland conditions book. The first, our race meeting opens on October the 2nd, which is just a fairly run-of-the-mill day. And there's two maidens worth $70,000. Shadwell Miles, $750,000, the grade one. So it's kind of very different from back home. So yeah, people do know if they hold on to the horses, they can win significant prize money. Yeah. So
well, we've got two horses running tonight for a grand total of £9,000. So that'll just put it into perspective.
And Mikey's horse costs four times as much.
No,
thanks, Ash. Thanks.
No, I mean even the Breeders' Cup, they've had to cut the purses a little, but I think that's still $28 million over the 2 days, which is pretty good, really. So, yeah, you might have to bring one or two horses to America, Mikey.
If only I had a couple that were good enough, then that's the problem.
Well, I think we need you to come back to Keeneland.
Yeah, exactly. Have you had some European buyers that managed to make it over?
Yeah, we have. I mean, obviously, it's a year that nothing's been very straightforward. So we were lucky that some of the politicians in Kentucky assisted getting visa waivers for a handful of Europeans to come over to the sale. So we have had a few people, quite a few breeze up guys, and one or two at the top end. And then like everyone else, we've sort of introduced online bidding, expanded the bidding by phone and everything. And both of those have really taken off this year. So a lot of people that haven't been able to make it have been buying sort of online, phoning people. And a lot of people would know someone in Kentucky that's looked at the horses for them, or bids for them. So it's ended up, actually, we have sold quite a good number of horses that will come back to Europe, just probably in different ways than we would have done it before.
Right, and Ed, how important would you say it is that horses like Kamiko and Roaring Lion, recent graduates from Keeneland September sale, come over to Europe and win Group 1s? And in some ways, would you say it's more important than winning Grade 1s in America or not so much?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the American market looks after itself a bit. You know, we are the biggest yearling sale, and probably in America, much more than in Europe, there's less huge owner breeders. So probably the cream of the yearling crop does come up for sale. So you're probably more likely than not to find a Kentucky Derby winner at auction. Whereas I don't think that many classic winners in Europe actually were sold at auction this year. So Kamiko was quite rare. But yeah, it's obviously important. It just showcases that these stallions can work in Europe. And yeah, you need to get the horses over there to advertise that fact. And generally, yeah, the people that have bought for years and years do very well with what they buy, often not spending a huge amount of money. Like someone like Robert Cowell has always come in the second week, sadly hasn't made it this year. But I mean, he's found good horses year after year. So yeah, they are there to be found.
And someone like Brendan Holland as well, Grove Stud, who obviously Pinhooks, he's a keen buyer at Keeneland as well, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's had great results. You know, he topped the Arcana sale in Doncaster with the Warfront for, I think, $650 last year in Arcana again, Ocean at Atlantique. He got 1.1 million euros. So the Breeze Up guys have done really well with the American horses. And I think some made it over, as I said, and then others had other people looking for them. So I think a fair number will reappear in Europe next year. And yeah, quite an interesting aspect of that actually is that a lot more American owners are buying at the Breeze Ups in Europe. So we end up with horses like War of Will, Mr. Monomoy, Etty Indian, those sort of horses bought at Keeneland at yearlings, those yearlings go to a European Breeze Up and then they get bought by an American and come back to America. But it's a very, very good market that. So yeah, and as you say, Brendan's done extremely well.
And Ed, you're a regular face over here at our yearling sales. After you finish up there, are you going to be able to come over, or are you going to have to concentrate on the racing?
I am coming back. I think I'll have to quarantine for 14 days, which has been another aspect of all the sale. You know, people going to Arcana and things. You probably people couldn't do every yearling sale this year because they have to quarantine going from one to another. So that's another reason why people couldn't make it. But yes, I should hopefully be turning up somewhere at a sale back home.
Good stuff. Well, look, we very much look forward to seeing you when you're over here. And good luck with the last couple of days of the Keeneland sale. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Oh, thanks, guys. And thanks for asking me on.
At Racing Post Bloodstock, we recently launched our annual Autumn Yearling Supplement, a pullout in the paper with everything you need to read ahead of the latest yearling sales. If you would like to have a read, please visit racingpost.com/bloodstock and click on the banner at the top of the page. Final guest on this latest episode of Top Lot is the chairman of the Federation of Bloodstock Agents and a bloodstock agent himself, Oliver St. Lawrence. How are you, Oliver?
Very good. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem, it's a pleasure.
So, Oliver, as chairman of the Federation of Bloodstock Agents, can you just tell us a little bit about the organisation, how it started, and what the purpose of it is?
The organisation was set up, I think, in about the 1970s by Sir Philip Payne Galway and a whole load of other agents who were the dominant people in their day. And it's been going ever since. It comprises about 55 members now, solely people who are got UK addresses or have a base here. And our whole philosophy is to try and make sure that integrity is at the forefront of everyone's minds and that we are looking after our principles at every stage. There's a council, and we've become pretty active in trying to push causes for our members and ensure that everyone knows exactly where they should be.
And you say it's for UK-based addresses. Is it solely just for UK agents then, or is the plan to extend it to Ireland?
It is really just for UK agents. There are some anomalies. I mean, Luke Lillingston was based in England for many years, but has now gone home to run his family farm. So Luke and there's a couple of other members like that who were based in England, but are now living abroad, but still probably have a UK address. So there are a couple of anomalies, but basically it's for agents based in the UK.
And is the idea to encourage people to... So people who are looking to get into the UK market, is it the idea that they would contact you guys and you kind of, would you delegate the orders to the members, or is it purely for representation within the industry?
No. I mean, we point people. We don't, Louise Kemble is our secretary and she looks after the day-to-day running of the Federation. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of day-to-day running. It tends to come in little spats. But if someone contacts Louise or emails, we'll point them in the direction of the list of agents on the FBA website, which is bloodstock-agencies.com, and let them choose their own agent. It's rather hard for us to be pointing people directly to a particular agent. That would seem favoritism, but... yes, I mean, we try... It's to try and get people to... have confidence that the agent they're using has integrity and will look after their best interests.
Mm-hmm. And Oliver, do you have anything you particularly like to change as a federation in terms of the way that sales are working, whether it's more transparency or I thought that what Arcana do with their commission-based system where they actually pay the agents, I thought that was quite interesting. Do you have anything you'd like to change or in the future?
There's no big thing I'd like to change. I mean, some of my members would definitely love the English sales companies, the Arcana method of 5% being paid by the sales company. But the Federation at the moment hasn't taken a stance on that. We would encourage the sales companies to go in that direction, but we haven't actually officially called for them to do that. There are lots of little things we'd like to do. At the moment, the sales houses are doing an incredible job trying to get the whole industry together and through these COVID times and moving sales and going out of their way and at huge expense to them to try and make sure that the industry stays on the road.
Oliver, going on to the sales, what have you made of the yearling sales in Europe so far? And are you looking forward to all being tats? And I take it you'll be going in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the sales so far, one's got to be realistic. The horses are trading. They're not trading at the same levels as they were last year. It appears to me that it's down somewhere around 22-25%. But if you'd told me it was only going to be down that much in the height of COVID, and we seem to be getting back into the height of COVID again, I'd say that was a good result. The top of the market seems to be firm, but it tends to hold fairly firm. It's that bottom end that seems to have its moments. Looking forward, there's some lovely stock on paper anyhow in the Goffs Orby sale up at Doncaster next week and at the three Tattersall sales. I'm sure whenever one enters the ring as an agent, you normally find there's plenty of resistance. And you find it hard to buy on the nicer horses anyhow.
And Oliver, how have your sort of conversations been with your clients? Has it been a slightly more difficult conversation this year than it might have been for the last couple of years in terms of the prize money situation in the UK, et cetera?
I think so. I mean, I've got one. I do a lot of work, as you may know, in Bahrain. They have so far not really worried about the prize money in the UK. I'm sure it's at the back of their minds, but they're more interested in the prestige of it all and having some nice horses. My UK clients are probably a bit more resistant. They're not getting as much fun from the whole experience, and they're not getting the prize money they were before, which wasn't great anyhow, but it's certainly reduced since, understandably, to some degree.
Does something like the initiative of the Great British Bonus help with your conversations and help your approach to these upcoming yearling sales?
Yeah, I'm a great fan of the Great British Bonus. I think it's been a great initiative by the TBA. £20,000 for fillies. If you win one of the races, well, you can win a multiple of the races, as you probably know. And I think the Great British Bonus should help the market. It should help prospective owners have a bit more fun and get a bit more reward out of it all. And I hope people at the coming yearling sales really pay attention to those fillies that sometimes would have been overlooked. Mm. I certainly will be.
Yeah. And Oliver, you touched on your relationship with Bahrain. You've bought some very nice horses for Sheikh Nasser bin Hamad Al Khalifa recently, including Dair, who won the Albany and then was Group 1 placed last year. Are you planning to go back to the well again?
Yes, well, I mean, a lot of my more expensive purchases that I've already made this year at Arcana and places have been for Sheikh Nasser and his younger brother, Sheikh Khalid. And they've been very active and they're very enthusiastic, and they're having a lot of fun at the moment. And there's a lot of friendly rivalry between all the owners based in Bahrain, and they're they're enjoying taking each other on and taking everyone else on.
So, Oliver, also, do you tend to buy yearlings on spec? Can you tell us a bit about your arrangement with Fawzi Nass?
I don't tend to buy yearlings on spec. I've never been that brave. I know plenty of agents that do and then go out there and look for an owner for them, quite often in conjunction with a trainer. Obviously, I have some trainers who buy them on spec, but I don't get involved in the spec part myself, rightly or wrongly. I've never been brave enough. You mentioned Fawzi Nass. I mean, Fawzi's been buying quite a few of these horses I've been buying when he's been by my side, but he also looks after or advises Sheikh Nasser and Sheikh Khalid. So he's an integral link for me with those Bahraini buyers. And without him, I wouldn't have the offing to be buying for them.
And Salute the Soldier was a bit of a standout, wasn't he? A horse in training purchase for him, and he won a Group 3 last time out in Maidan. So he was
yes. Yeah, I mean, he was a... we'd actually had our last bid at 375, I think it was, last year. And our opponent in the ring bid 380. I think we pay him for 385, but you're going to tell me I'm wrong. And the auctioneer persuaded us to have five more, which we did, and it secured the deal. And he's been a lucky horse. He was favourite for the Godolphin Mile, which, of course, World Cup night was called off in Dubai last year. But yes, he gave them a lot of fun in the autumn last year, and in the spring this year. And we had a fabulous spring.
And could you tell us a little bit about Port Lions, who won the first race at the Saudi Cup in February? I believe he didn't cost too much money, and he's been a real success.
He's been a real success. Freddie Tilicki put him up to us, and he didn't cost a lot of money. I mean, he was less than 100,000, and he just loves, he thrived once he got out to Bahrain. I think he loved that very firm ground they get in Bahrain, and really came in own and was enjoying winning race after race. And taking him to Saudi seemed the natural progression. Never thought we were going to beat Deirdre in the race, or I didn't. I knew that Fawzi was very pleased with how he was training. When he fluffed his lines and fell out of the stalls and gave them all 5-6 lengths, I thought all our chances of even being placed were gone. And I was amazed when he sailed down the outside and won. And it was a great day, really great day.
Amazing. And just finally, Oliver, do you have some 2-year-olds that we're yet to see this year that are ones to look out for?
Yes and no is the answer to that. We've got some very backward types that are that we've got big hopes for next year, but nothing that's going to sort of come out and hopefully win a maiden and go on to group races. We unleashed a horse with Mark Johnson. It was actually his second start the other day at Beverly this week, called Namuz.
He was
a wooden basset horse who won by 17 lengths. Not certain what the opposition was.
Are there any plans for him for the rest of the year?
Not at the moment. We haven't discussed with Mark at the moment. I think he's got to take a step up in grade, though Mark may be keen for him to get more education. I mean, next year is going to be his year. He's certainly been put in some group races in order to give us options, but we haven't sat down with Mark as yet and worked a plan out.
Would you say that type of horse you said about the having backward two-year-olds, would you say that's consistent with the type of horse that you tend to buy?
It's certainly the type of horse that Fawzi Nass likes when we're wandering around. He likes a horse with a bit of size and scope, which are more likely to therefore be three-year-olds. De Gea isn't, she's definitely not small. She's 15'3", but she was more of a two-year-old type than some of them. But I mean, they're all very patient owners. They're very happy giving the trainers the time to discover, you know, what the horses are like and when they need to come out. They're great that direction. There's no pressure on the trainers to get the horses out and moving and things.
Great. Well, Oliver, thank you so much for coming on. We've really enjoyed it and that we found it very interesting. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you to the two of you. Thank you for giving me the time.
That brings the latest episode of Top Lot, brought to you by Racing Post Members Club, to a close. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it, and thanks once again to our excellent guests for taking the time to join us, and we will see you next time.